Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is March 7th. We are live with our newest Decent Deep Dive, Ivan Layer. Matt, this has been a long time coming.
Yeah, talk of the town of ETH Denver. Very, very topical just over the last like few months with AppChain, shared security. You know, this builds a lot on the Cosmos 2.0 stuff. Check out our deep dive on that. You know, I just think this is one that like I've gotten more requests on, I think, than any other topic. So let's get into it.
Let's get straight in. All right, Matt, why does this exist? The core question of our podcast.
EigenLayer. So EigenLayer basically exists because it's easy to innovate as a chain developer, but it's not easy to get security, right?
Explain what you mean. Like, if you want to launch an app chain, or if you just want to like launch a new blockchain on Cosmos or an EVM blockchain, like compatible blockchain, like it's easy to launch the chain, but it's hard for people to actually like buy the token, stake the token, provide security to actually and like validate the chain.
Yeah, it's not even that those things are hard. It's that it's hard to bootstrap a value of a token, right? Okay. Like these are, you know, everything is a social consensus, and a lot of these are inherently valueless tokens until they can prove that they provide some kind of value, right? Mm-hmm. And so EigenLayer exists because as a developer, you might have a great idea for how you can improve like a consensus algorithm to make the settlement faster. You know, Ethereum settlement is like 15 minutes, right? Maybe you have an idea for how to take that down to seconds. Maybe you have an idea for how to improve like throughput. Maybe you just have like a UTXO model that you want to try out. And so there's all sorts of places that you as a developer can innovate. But you also have to think about how you're going to create economic security within like a proof of stake system. Because when people put assets up for stake, they need to carry some kind of value. Right. So otherwise, like slashing doesn't really do anything.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, the problem here is you start a new network, you create a new token around that network, you have people staking it, but if it has no value, people don't care if they lose it.
Yeah. Right?
If they lose some of that stake because they're engaging in some, you know, malicious activity or whatever, right? They don't really care because it's
worthless. It's worthless. Anyway.
Yeah. So, okay. And is this like a problem that a lot of networks have run into, or how, like, what, you know, is this like a problem that we're seeing quite a bit, or?
Yeah. I mean, you can remember back to like the whole like Cosmos airdrop season.
Oh yeah.
Like Juno. Yeah.
Oh man. Jinx.
And I mean, like, at that
our point, one fan, do you remember?
Oh my God, I forgot about that fan. I hope they're
Juno
okay.
Yeah.
Oh God.
We had one fan about 6 months ago who was obsessed with Juno, and Matt told him, we'll do the deep dive once it goes past its all-time low. And the guy never responded. He deleted his Twitter account. And then it just went down like 99%. So that happened with a lot of the Cosmos chains, right? Yeah, like you're saying, the airdrop season.
Yeah, and it's this idea that like if you have a token, you can get some value for it, and it becomes clear that it's not going up in value, you'll just unstake it and sell it.
Mm.
And even trying to figure out like the initial token distributions for those things was not easy, and that's why the airdrop season was such a thing. It was like however much, say, Juno you have, like we'll give you like some other token, like proportionally, right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea is that like, A, it's really hard to bootstrap value for a token. B, it's really hard to do like a fair launch, right? Especially now that like ICOs are not the meta anymore. You know, we saw this with Bitcoin. It was a truly fair launch, right? Anybody could mine it, and it was like cheap enough to do on like a desktop computer for a while.
Yeah.
With Ethereum, we had the ICO model, and then a relatively fair like proof of work based system, right?
Yeah.
And then everything after that basically became like VCs would invest into the early like token round.
Yeah.
And you know, dump on retail effectively.
Right.
And so not just like creating like value for a token, and then you have to have market makers involved, right, on centralized exchanges.
Yeah.
You have to get centralized exchanges to list it. So creating like a price for your token, I mean, you can see it with airdrops today. Look at the Blur airdrop, right?
Yeah.
Priced at what, like $4, and then like immediately to 40 cents.
Yeah.
And then back up again to 140.
Yeah, yeah.
And then back down to almost 40 cents now. Yeah. So pricing a token, distributing it fairly, just a very difficult problem to solve, right? Mm-hmm. And so as an app developer, as a blockchain developer, I might not want to have to worry about the bootstrapping of security here. I might just want to outsource that to another token.
Okay, I see. So I see where the problem comes in, because, you know, especially if you're going to have actual liquidity there, like, it's very hard to do that unless you have tons of participants involved. Like, you need market makers.
Yeah.
And you need liquidity across many avenues. And yeah, okay, so what is EigenLayer doing exactly? Like, there are various shared security kind of models, right? Like, there is the Cosmos shared security model, which is coming out at some point, right?
Yeah.
Where you can use the Atom token as and you like kind of borrow the security.
Yeah, you use it as a staking token for another chain. So backing up to just like shared security in general, yeah. Right? I might have some tokens, right? Mm-hmm. And I stake them.
Yeah.
What does that actually look like in the like physical world?
Yeah.
I have my private key, I have my public key, mm-hmm. And my public key holds some number of Atom tokens, let's say.
Right.
I stake them.
Yeah.
And then I can like get my stake can get slot, and then I run a program, like a client effectively on my desktop computer or my server or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And that software does all of the things that a staker does.
Mm.
So it creates blocks, it comes to consensus, it votes if that's part of the consensus protocol, and it listens for new transactions, it listens for the mempool,
mm-hmm.
And when it's its turn, it makes a block
and
broadcasts it out to the network. It participates in the gossip protocol and all that. That's like one piece of software that's running on a computer.
Okay.
And that piece of software runs with the private key somewhere on it,
mm-hmm.
So that it can sign blocks, so that it can sign attestations, et cetera.
Yeah.
Right?
And that is also how, if that validator ends up doing something that is against the protocol rules, since the private key is attached there, it can also slash or remove funds from that wallet.
Yeah. So let's think about slashing just like super basically.
Yeah.
The primary thing that you're trying to avoid is a fork in the network.
Okay.
So blockchains are built to create consensus, right? To create one unified view of the world. And the primary thing that you can do to like maliciously participate in the system is to sign two different blocks at the same height and send them out to the network, right? So block number 42069 mm-hmm. might be my turn to make a block, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have one block with like one set of transactions, and I have another block with another set of transactions, and I sign each of them saying these are valid. Each of these is the valid next block.
Okay.
I send one to half of the network participants, and I send the other to half of the network participants. And now they don't know how to come to consensus on it. So that's where the slashing takes place. Someone says, look, I have these two blocks at the same height. Basically, that signals to the world that this staker is supporting a fork in the chain. It's supporting two different versions of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a slashable offense.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is, given the two blocks that are at the same height that were signed by the same private key, we can take that evidence to the high court of slashing and be like, look, this person committed an offense. Let's take some of their assets and distribute them to me and to everyone else on the network.
Okay.
And so that's sort of at its core what slashing is there for. It's to prevent a fork in the chain.
Okay.
And so you can imagine in the like real physical world, what this looks like is I'm running some process on my computer, and that computer has my private key so that it can sign blocks and attestations and all that stuff.
Right.
But I could run that piece of software in parallel, right? I could run it on two computers, each of which has the private key. For two different blockchains, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the slashing here, the question becomes, okay, like, how do I make it so that those assets are up at are up like for staking, like that they've been put at stake and can be slashed by each of the two protocols, right? That's where shared security becomes a thing. And you know, you can imagine like, so the Cosmos 2.0 vision is like hundreds of chains maybe, where like any of them has access to slashing these, to slashing that person's stake. But each of those blockchains also pays out rewards to the validator for participating as a good citizen. And so it's about sort of like being able to parallelize the running of that piece of software, the client software, without having to have to parallelize like the state.
The assets, right. Okay. So the assets stay in one place.
Yeah.
But you have multiple client softwares running using the same set of assets as stake.
Exactly.
Okay, okay, okay. And if you do something that's out of the bounds on any of the chains where your stake is, you know, being used as stake to validate that chain, you can get slashed.
Yeah, okay. And so the staking software itself has to support that sort of paradigm, right? Where it can check to say, hey, look, were these two blocks signed by the same person? Are they at the same height? And if so, then slash, right? It has to support listening for invalid blocks on multiple chains. And so, you know, with Atom 2.0, I think the idea was, well, we can just like at a protocol level, update the hub to support this, right? And for that, like, you need all the validators to participate in validating all of the chains. So there's a governance agreement, and it's not just like you're staking on the hub anymore. It's also you're staking for these other things too.
Right.
Everybody involved is going to do it.
Why do you need every single validator to validate every single chain?
For there, it was for interoperability.
Oh, I see.
And that's nice, right? Because you can have chains talk to each other in ways that you couldn't. If like every network participant is involved in all of the chains and they all have access to the same data, you can have things like, you know, atomic, like cross-chain transactions, which is pretty cool. So, you know, you have that heartbeat, that block space is just like parallelized, right?
Okay.
So on Ethereum though, you know, if you want to use Ethereum as the common, or if you want to use ETH as the common staking asset, that's where it gets more complicated. And that's where EigenLayer comes in.
Okay. So right now, ETH, staking your ETH, you have to have 32 ETH itself. You basically have to be running, you know, the hardware. Like, it's pretty simple hardware now, but you have to be running it yourself. Or you can go through a provider like a Coinbase or a Kraken or a Lido or one of the, or Rocket Pool or one of these.
Frax.
Yeah, Frax, where you don't have to necessarily have to have all 32 ETH to stake. So how does EigenLayer work?
So EigenLayer has a couple of approaches, right? So the simplest one to think about would accept like liquid staking tokens or liquid staking derivatives as staking assets.
Okay.
So you stake your ETH through a provider like Lido, you get Lido staked ETH back as an ERC-20. You take that ERC-20 and you deposit it to the EigenLayer contract.
Okay, I see.
And so, you know, listen to our deep dive on liquid staking derivatives if you don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But basically, that's like an easy way to rehypothecate, right? And it's been used in DeFi forever as ways to like have liquidity on your ETH.
Yeah, you've always been able to use those liquid staking derivatives, whether it's ST ETH or CB ETH now, or
Rocket ETH.
You've been able to use those for, you know, to take loans against them, to, you know, to put them in, like, to LP with them, like, to literally anything in DeFi, to even trade against them, right? So it's like, what is EigenLayer exactly kind of doing that's new here?
So EigenLayer is organizing the staking and slashing for other chains now. Okay, so once you've deposited those assets into the EigenLayer contract, let's say there's a minimum of 32 ETH, just to keep it simple. So I take my 32 ETH, I deposit them to Lido to get stake, and then it gives me 32 Lido staked ETH back.
Yeah.
And now you have a validator running the, you know, Ethereum-like core protocol, acting as a validator on Ethereum. But I also have my staked ETH, and I've deposited them into Lido. Into EigenLayer's contract.
Mm-hmm.
Now I say to EigenLayer, look, I have 32 ETH and I want to validate this protocol.
Mm-hmm.
I'm signing a transaction over here. And then over here, I take that same private key on some server or something, and I start running the client software for the new protocol, for the like secondary blockchain. And if I act maliciously, anyone else on that network can, on Ethereum, say, hey, EigenLayer, look at these two blocks that Matt signed for. This is like clearly, this is clearly not okay. Mm-hmm. He's signaling for a break in consensus. This breaks the rules.
Right.
And the EigenLayer contract can validate whether those two blocks were signed by me, whether they exist at the same height. And then if that's true, it can take some of my staked ETH that's deposited in the contract, because it has like custody of them now.
Mm-hmm.
And it can slash me, and it can distribute the slash to other stakers on the network.
Whoa, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take this example, right? So you said the 32 ETH, let's just run it back. I have 32 ETH, right? Let's live in a fantasy, great fantasy world where I have 32 ETH.
Mm-hmm.
I go to Lido, Lido.fi. I put in my 32 ETH. I say I want to stake. I stake. They give me 32 ST ETH, which I can then use. It's an ERC20 token. I can use it. It's just in my wallet, right? I can use it wherever I want.
Mm-hmm.
I go to EigenLayer's website. I connect wallet. I deposit my 32 ETH there. I say I want to now stake my 32 ETH on Avalanche, let's say, right? Or like, I don't know, whatever.
Uniswap chain.
Uniswap chain or DYDX chain or whatever, right? Yeah. They will then take that 32 ETH or the 32 staked ETH, STETH, right? The ERC20 contract. Use that as stake. Like, what will they do? Will that, like, because the native staking token of any chain, right? Like, if it's Avalanche, it's AVAX, right? If it's like DYDX chain, it's going to be the DYDX token, right? So, like, how do they provide like actual kind of like staking and like security for that chain without having that native token? Do they just, is that what EigenLayer does? They provide that kind of security for you, and then they basically decide, like, okay, if you've done something, like, I don't really get where that, like, where am I getting those tokens, right, to provide security on the second chain?
So this is kind of the mindfuck thing about shared security, is that typically you think of a native token as doing two things. It's a gas token and it's a staking token.
Right.
But in this state of the world, it's just the staking token is just EigenLayer ETH.
Okay, I see.
Right, or Lido staked ETH, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the actual staked asset is the staked ETH that you've deposited to the EigenLayer contract.
Okay, I see.
And that's it. Right?
And are all proof of stake chains, they all function this way, where you can stake with like any asset, basically?
So here the chain would have to decide that what the staking asset is. So maybe they're only going to accept Lido staked ETH. Maybe they're only going to accept Rocket Pool.
Maybe
they're only going to accept like native ETH. We'll get to that later. Whatever token it is just locked up into a staking contract on Ethereum. Similarly to Matic, actually. So Polygon, the like staking contract is on Ethereum. And so slashing happens on Ethereum, staking happens on Ethereum, delegation happens on Ethereum. Everything to do with staking is happening on the Ethereum blockchain, which is part of how Matic has always said that it like inherits some security from Ethereum. This is part of the reason.
Okay, I see.
And so So there is no secondary staking token, right? Mm. So it wouldn't happen for like DYDX chain or probably Uniswap chain, but it would happen for New Chain 1.0, right? Where New Chain, they might have their gas token could be their own token, but the staking token is ETH that's locked up in some way, shape, or form in the Eigenlayer contract on Ethereum.
Okay, I see. And is that like do the current proof of stake chains like allow for that, or is it New Chains that they're going after Eigenlayer?
It's New Chains.
New Chains, yeah. Okay.
Because the current proof of stake chains, they're all running their own, you know, they're all using their own token as the staking token.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. So
that's one way of doing it, is with like staked ETH, like liquid staking derivatives. Yeah. The other way of doing it is with native ETH. Mm-hmm. So the way this would work is like when you stake your ETH, you specify who's allowed to withdraw that ETH. Mm. And here you change that from you change it to Eigenlayer. Mm. You change it to like the Eigenlayer DAO's like address. Mm. And so now they can slash you by withdrawing some of that ETH from your stake just natively on Ethereum.
Okay, I see.
Yeah. So how comfy would you feel?
Yeah, not too comfy, right? If they can just withdraw at any time.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, right, like what if you decide to withdraw? Do they just cancel your stake on the other side?
I guess you have to play within their rules, right? Yeah. So maybe there's an unbonding period for the secondary chain that you've elected to validate. Mm-hmm. And so you might have to wait that long to unstake your native ETH even, or your ERC20 ETH.
Okay, I see. Okay, and now, like, the core question I have here, right, is somebody who has, like, if you have 32 ETH, right, like, why are you trying to validate this second chain in the first place? Like, just to provide security?
More APYs, bro.
Yeah, is it really just for the yield?
Yeah, it's for the yield. Okay. So it increases the amount of yield that you can earn on the same asset.
Yeah.
Which, so it's theoretically, like, is, you know, good, right? Yeah. And it creates more block space, and that block space inherits why security more block from... Why because it's more chains.
Oh.
More block space than you have with just Ethereum.
Yeah, right? I see. Okay. Because you can spin up more chains without having to, like, worry about the security aspect.
Yeah. And okay. And it might even be the case that, like, Lido, or that, like, Eigenlayer is like, look, we have four chains to choose from, and you can opt in all four if you want. It might be the case that they're like, we have, you know, you can only do one at a time, right? But generally, the way it's going to work is you're going to take your Lido stake to you. You're going to deposit it to the Eigenlayer contract, and you're going to spin up however many computer processes and validate however many chains. Mm-hmm. And you'll just, like, choose as many as possible. The issue is, what if there's a bug in the client software for a given chain, and it causes everyone to, like, accidentally double sign at a given height, which would be a slashable offense? Or, you know, there's some kind of consensus issue. You know, as a staker, you're not really interested in, like, going in and running an audit on every single blockchain to, like, provide secondary security for it.
Right. So, let's think about where some of these things could kind of go wrong here, right? Like, yeah, if you're staking your ETH and something kind of goes wrong on a secondary chain, you can lose your ETH.
Yeah, which is something that I very much don't want to do.
Yeah.
Right? Don't make me break out the ETH tattoo, man.
And on these other chains, are you, like, basically depositing your assets into, like, a pool of some sort? Or are you an individual validator at that point?
It could go either way, right? Yeah. I mean, you could imagine maybe Eigenlayer runs their own set of validators, similar to like a Lido, right? And they partner with people that are running validators. You know how Lido, you know, you deposit your asset and then they handle the rest.
Right.
This could be like that with secondary chains, where you deposit your asset, which is like a, you know, a liquid staking derivative of ETH, and then they handle the rest. Or it could be like you run your own validator. Right.
So I guess the core question there that I'm asking is, like, you're basically trusting Eigenlayer, right?
Yes, you are very much trusting EigenLayer.
Okay.
Right. In both instances, right? So you're trusting them from a DAO level to not like fuck you somehow. If they've built in like a backdoor to like steal everyone's staked ETH or something. And if there's one thing we know about DAOs, it's that if they can fuck you, like, then they can just do that. Mm-hmm. Right.
You have no recourse, for sure.
You have no recourse. Your ETH is in their contract. Mm-hmm. And if you're staking ETH, I would argue that you're someone that likes ETH.
Yeah.
That really doesn't want to put that at risk. Right. So I think there's that as a primary concern is like, what if EigenLayer fucks you? Mm. There's a secondary concern, which is like, what if the protocol fucks up, right? Mm. So let's imagine like
the EigenLayer protocol itself.
Some other chain fucks up. The other chain that you're validating, like maybe they had a bug in their client software that causes you to accidentally double sign.
Mm.
There should be some way of rolling that back. Right. Of stepping in and being like, whoa, this wasn't Matt's fault. There was a bug in the client software. Don't slash him for that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there is an override here.
Yeah.
Which is the proposal by the EigenLayer like DAO. I think they call it Layer Labs or something, is to have a backdoor built in that can override slashing, that can roll back slashing effectively in the case that like, there was some issue with like the client software that like wasn't that person's fault. They weren't trying to be malicious. They weren't actively like trying to double sign. They just like accidentally did it because there was an imperfection in the client software. And so what they've said is we'll set up and moreover, like you don't want to have to audit everything that you've opted into validating, right?
Yeah.
So what they've said is like, all right, our DAO is going to audit everything.
Interesting.
And they'll have the keys to roll back any slashing as appropriate.
Mm.
So if you're maliciously like double signing at a certain block height, then like they're not going to like roll back your slashing. But if you're accidentally doing it because of some bug, then they'll do it. Or if there's a bug in the EigenLayer smart contract, like they'll give it back, right?
Okay, so you're trusting them there too.
Yeah, or
you're trusting the DAO at least.
You're trusting the DAO. Yeah. And this isn't like a simple thing to trust, right? Because fully auditing, like auditing a smart contract is one thing. Auditing an entirely new blockchain is completely different. And it could be in God knows what programming language, right? If you're going for throughput, it could be in Rust, right?
Yeah.
And this was an issue with like the wormhole hack. The reason the wormhole hack happened was because like, it's not like it wasn't audited. It was just that like there was a bug and it was in Rust and like nobody caught it because it was so like niche, right?
Yeah.
So who knows what kind of shenanigans like you could accidentally introduce in a new blockchain.
Yeah.
You need to be really careful about that.
Right.
Okay. And so you need that EigenLayer DAO to be full of like protocol experts, people that really know what they're doing, that are able to like dive deep and make sure that like the client software is going to work as intended. Or else like, you could wind up accidentally fucking up everyone's stakes. Mm. And then if it's staked on multiple chains, the other chains aren't going to know what to do, right? Because they need to assign stake weight to people based on how much they have. And if they're getting slashed, like they need to respond to that. So every chain that's getting validated by EigenLayer based stake is going to have to know how to interoperate if like you're validating some other chain and like you fuck up and like get slashed. It's going to need to be able to handle that within its code and pay you stake rewards and whatever, as a result.
So the idea here is that you will basically just take your ETH or whatever asset, staked ETH or whatever, and be able to validate for many chains, like not just one other one.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That can introduce many problems there too, because like, yeah, if one messes up, the other chains will not know what to do or whatever the case may be. And then it causes kind of a ripple effect.
Yeah.
Interesting. So if really, I mean, I can definitely see the appeal here, right? Like if you see this future around, you know, app chains or, you know, new chains that are just continuously getting spun up that need to get security from somewhere. You can have just one asset or a few assets, core assets that are really providing all the security. And from a staker's perspective, if you have 30, 50 ETH, whatever, yeah, you could be validating for 50 chains and collecting, you know, whatever. Initially, it'll probably be like higher APYs too, right? Because on ETH, you're getting what, 4 or 5% right now.
Yeah.
But on many chains, it's higher. And on new chains that launch, it'll probably be 100%, 200%, right? So I can definitely see the appeal there. But there are risks, like the risks that we just laid out. So just going back, there's more, like the big risks are, one, you're trusting, first of all, you're giving access to EigenLayer to withdraw your ETH.
Not just access, effectively ownership.
Ownership, sure. While it's staked.
Yeah.
And while it's in the deposited into the EigenLayer contract, you're basically giving them ownership of your ETH.
Yeah.
And it's being staked elsewhere. They're doing other things with it, but basically they have complete control of it, right?
Yep.
Then you're trusting that the blockchains that you're providing security for, that your assets are being used as stake for, will actually not mess up and not do something to cause you to get slashed on the main chain, on the original chain. And in between that process, you're trusting EigenLayer that if that does happen, their kind of DAO prevents you from getting slashed on the main chain, on ETH, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of, those are the main kind of, what, not really attack vectors, but kind of like trust assumptions, yeah, that you're making.
And it's not just so to clarify, like, it's not like they can slash you on the, like, native ETH, like, staking.
Oh,
mechanism.
They can just take it.
They just take your
ETH. Yeah, they take it. I see, yeah.
And so in the ERC-20 version of the world, it looks like them taking your Lido staked ETH. And in the you know, native version of the world, it looks like them, like, withdrawing some of your ETH.
Right. So yeah. They don't slash you. It's if you get slashed on the secondary chain or if something kind of goes wrong on the secondary chain, then
they just take
your assets on the main chain get taken. Yeah.
Okay. It's the trust me, bro version of security.
Yeah. Okay, I see. Interesting. So that's where the trust assumptions lie. Are there any other, like, issues or other kind of, like, things within EigenLayer to be aware of?
So there's an interesting, like, corollary here, right? Which is, ETH today secures Ethereum, right? It secures the economic activity happening there. It secures the value that is, like, locked there. It secures Ethereum. But as you increase the amount of value that's being secured by ETH, then you do, in theory, attract more danger, right?
Yeah.
And with like the same notional amount of security.
Mm.
So, you know, it's a little bit like if you're running a country and you have an army, like a military of a certain size.
Mm-hmm.
And then you discover that your country has oil reserves.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to need to up that, like, the percent of GDP spent on military,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm.
that's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. And so there is a sort of an interesting question here, right? Which is, like, what happens to the price of ETH, right? If you can stake it in multiple places, you know, and you're running, like, a discounted cash flow model, then in theory, the value of ETH goes up according to, like, the discounted future token flows,
mm-hmm.
or reward flows, right?
Yeah.
If that fails to happen, then this could, like, blow back and cause, like, systemic risk to ETH, right? So let's imagine, like, a really cooked up example,
mm-hmm.
right? We have a new chain,
mm-hmm.
that has, like, some token that goes wildly up in value.
Mm-hmm.
So that token, maybe its market cap is $1 trillion, let's say. If you take it to a centralized exchange and sell half of the token supply for $500 billion,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, then you can, and then you can roll it back, right? So let's think about, like, this attack vector of, like, I take a token, I send it to a centralized exchange, I sell it, I cash out.
Mm-hmm.
Then I roll back the chain, and so I still have that asset over here, and I've double spent it now.
Mm.
the thing that prevents me from doing that today is it would take a lot of money for me to like take over the Ethereum network to the point where I could roll back the chain.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And have that double spend attack. Right. But in this hypothetical world where we have some asset that's super, super valuable, unobtainium, on the third chain or on the secondary chain, right?
Yeah.
Like, it might actually be worth it for me to do that.
Mm.
Obviously once you roll back the chain, everyone's going to freak the fuck out.
Yeah.
So your ability to double spend is not that good.
Mm-hmm.
But, maybe there's some other centralized exchange that's not listening as closely, and then you send it there, you'd cash out twice.
Hmm.
And so now you stand to make $1 trillion, but you might only have to put up 300 billion or whatever it takes to become like 66% or 51% or whatever of the network, right?
Hmm.
And that can fuck with Ethereum security model, because all of a sudden you're rolling a bunch of stuff back, you have 51% attacks, all sorts of things, right? It just creates like a bigger bounty for the same level of security.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I see.
And so it does create an interesting question, which I've kicked around a little bit in the last week or so, which is like, how big does the total amount of stake need to be to secure assets worth X? Does it need to be 0.1X? Does it need to be 1X? Does it need to be 2X? Unclear, right? So just one thing to point out, right?
Right. Okay. So I guess it kind of laid out all the trust assumptions there. Like, are they live right now? Are they deployed? Like, where are they?
No, they have like a 30-page white paper.
Nice.
They literally named it EigenLayer, which is a pretty like, I don't like names that look down on the user.
Why does that look down on the user?
Because eigen is like, it's used in like other like matrix math terms, like eigenvector, eigenvalue. And that's like linear algebra concepts that like your average blockchain participant doesn't really know about.
Dude, I thought it was like a sea creature.
Wait, really?
Yeah, that was like an eigen. Nice. That's like a nice little fish or something.
And it just feels like the whole project is exuding this ethos of being smarter than you, right? So they're like, look, man, trust us with your ETH, okay? We'll check the child chains so that you know that you're not going to get slashed. Don't worry. And if you get slashed, don't worry. Like, we'll make sure that like your ETH comes back to you as it's supposed to. We're naming it this thing because we're geniuses, and we have a 30-page white paper. And like, don't worry about it, bro. And I just don't like that. And I don't mean to get all like, not your keys, not your crypto, but like, holy shit, like these are not your keys.
Yeah.
True. There's very few assets that I will get so possessive over as my ETH.
Yeah, right? It's true.
Especially my staked ETH.
Yeah. I mean, like, to be clear, this is different than something like Lido, right? Where it's like, you're still giving over your ETH.
Yes.
You are getting another asset in return, like directly, right? That you can sell in the open market. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
Right. And
you're still trusting Lido, right? Not to abscond with people's ETH.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If they leave with people's ETH, the value of that derivative token also goes down. So you are trusting them quite a bit.
Yeah.
But you at least have that, like, I don't know, one-to-one derivative token that is in your wallet, right?
Yeah.
Whereas here, you're basically, your stake is still there. It's still there, but it could be gone at any point. Like,
yeah, and theoretically, so could the Lido stake. They could withdraw it to the Lido governance contract and send it to themselves.
Right.
With Lido, it feels like sufficiently decentralized is the thing, right? It doesn't take a genius to spin up an ETH validator. It takes like reasonable like skill with hardware, but like it's not hard. And so for Lido, they can have like 50 validator providers the way they do. And it feels like sufficiently decentralized that you're not super worried about it. Same deal with Rocket Pool, right? So with Rocket Pool, they handle slashing in like they have a sort of insurance fund for slashing, right? And like when you spin up a Rocket Pool validator, you have to post as collateral some Rocket some RPL token, right? And then they will sell that to make it up to the user who like staked alongside you if you get slashed, right? Both of those just feel like safer and more like the risk has been decentralized or socialized even relative to this, where it just feels more one-to-one, more personal. And the decision of who is going to validate a chain is a much harder, of whether or not to validate a chain, is just a much more complex one than whether or not to spin up a new validator. Like, it's easy to spin up a new validator. It's very hard to go in and audit like a brand new like blockchain, right?
Okay. So you don't really see the usage picking up.
Well, I think it'll pick up. Yeah, I think this is going to work really well. I just would, it crosses too many trust barriers for me to want to do it myself. Because let's say I'm doing this, right? First, I have to trust Lido. Then I have to trust EigenLayer.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And I have to trust them in a bunch of different ways. I have to trust them not to run off with my ETH the way I have to trust Lido not to do that. I have to trust them not to, like, pick up a protocol that, like, winds up fucking up the, like, consensus. And I have to trust them that if that happens, they are, in fact, going to step in and, like, not unslash me.
Yeah.
And I have to trust that they're not going to unslash anyone that does behave maliciously. And so the whole thing winds up just feeling super centralized, but it's almost like gotta be, right? Like choosing whether or not to validate a chain is a very personal decision. And so I think
like, do you get to choose that within EigenLayer, or do they make all these decisions on your behalf?
They'll probably allow you to do both.
Right.
Choosing whether or not to, it just feels personal. It's very intimate, right? It's like, that's my stake, man.
Yeah,
like, you know, I'm putting that directly at risk here. And so choosing whether or not to participate in that is like a very personal choice. And I don't feel comfortable handing that over to a DAO that, by virtue of this being such a complicated decision to make, I don't feel, you know, it's by necessity small. It's a small group of people that can really effectively do, or companies, right, that can really effectively audit this stuff and like make those decisions. So like, I think it's hard for me to see a world where I want to use this. Now, here's what I think should actually happen.
Let's hear it.
I think Lido should do this. You're already trusting Lido, right?
Yeah.
Why not like trust Lido a little more? It's a little bit like USDC. It's like, I heard, you know, like there were rumors. I'm hearing rumors. A few months ago about some issue, some like very non-specific issue with USDC. This is like back at like peak FTX FUD. So I guess like November, December. And it was like, you know, what do you do if you think USDC is unbacked? Do you swap it for ETH? Do you swap it for Bitcoin? Like, those are going to be down.
It's all going to be wrecked.
Like, if USDC turns out only like 70% backed, do you think ETH is really down less than 30% on the day?
That's true.
Maybe. Like,
that's a good point. We're all just too deep now. We have no recourse.
If Circle's got issues, there's like very little that we can do. No recourse. This is why I think Circle would be the best bridge. You know, there's also just this like inherent, like, you know, I've gotten over Lido. I can swallow Lido, right, as like a place to stake my ETH, right? Because if there's an issue with Lido, it's big. Right. If there's an issue with Coinbase, it's big. So I can buy Coinbase ETH. But even I, like, even at 90 cents on the dollar, didn't buy Coinbase ETH because I was like, look, I will kick myself forever if, as I'm buying the dip, like, I buy the like Coinbase one and it goes to zero. I'll never forgive myself for that. So, you know, I just think that, like, for me, right, ETH is like a sacred like asset, right? It's like, you know, you can do what you want, but you'll never get my ETH, right? Especially my staked ETH. And so if I'm going to all the trouble of doing that, Lido, I've finally gotten over the hump of like, okay, fine. It's decentralized enough. It's integrated in the financial system enough that like, I don't think there's going to be an issue with Lido staked ETH.
Yeah.
Or I think if there is, say like all the Lido validators get slashed for some reason, I don't think we'd roll back the chain, but maybe we'd roll back the chain, right? Mm-hmm. If it's like big enough. So like imagine all the Lido staked ETH went to zero.
I can see a rollback for sure.
Yeah. Or an airdrop of new ETH to wherever Lido staked ETH currently resides, right? I think with this, it's just not there yet.
Yeah.
And I'll be damned if I'm going to let you get your grubby hands on my ETH, man. Not your keys, not your crypto.
All right. I love it. It's probably the right place to leave it.
I mean, what do you think? Would you use it?
I would with a small amount. Here's the thing, dude. I was talking to somebody about this, about staking specifically earlier today. It's like, it really just comes down to the numbers. Like, it's like, well, what's the APY?
That's the thing. I think it's going to be out of pocket. I think it's going to be really, really good.
I think it'll be really good, yeah.
And I think most people are going to wind up, not most people, but I think a lot of people are going to wind up doing this.
Yeah. I think it's going to go just like many other protocols, just like this, where it's like APYs are so high initially. Like it's kind of quiet. Some people get in, some people get in. And then it's like, whoa, look, Hasaka tweets about it. And then it's just like everybody's in. APYs are still quite high. TVL goes through the roof. And then it's like APYs slowly start to go down. All the other chains that you're kind of, you know, getting tokens from, token price starts to go down. And then mass withdrawal.
This is a great question. So do you think this increases the convexity of ETH prices?
Yeah, I actually do think so, right?
Yeah.
It's just more leverage.
Yeah, yeah.
More rehypothecation, more leverage.
The purpose of the financial system.
Less liquidity, too.
Yeah.
Right? Check all the boxes.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's the question is, like, if you have, like, an Ohm fork chain that's paying you, like, 100,000% APY in its native token as, like, block rewards.
Yeah.
And then someone sells all that, like, you know, as it's happening, like the price of like Ohm went up, right? Mm-hmm. Because people wanted to buy it, stake it, right?
Right.
It's a similar thing for ETH now.
Yeah,
it like subjects you to all of this.
That's actually super interesting. I think it'll get very like. I think this is what triggers the next bull run, I hate to say it. Like weird, crazy, crazy assets like this where it just creates a squeeze.
You know what we should do? We should do the DGEN EigenDAO. Where
the DGEN EigenDAO.
Yeah, okay. So like EigenDAO, EigenLayer DAO is not going to like fuck with like Doge, Shiba chain, like Olympus chain.
Yeah, that's true.
JPEG
that's true.
Chain, right?
Oh, like, yeah. We should have the truly permissionless, absolute DGEN.
Yeah, where we'll just fucking like sign on to anything as long as it uses the Cosmos SDK, like we'll just like sign up as validators.
That's
right?
So funny.
That's
pretty good. Yeah, actually, the DGEN fork.
Yeah, and then we rug. No, we would never rug.
Yeah, no, we would never rug.
Not on our list.
Wink, wink. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, definitely never gonna rug. You got anything else, Matt?
No, what do you think? You think it'll work? What do you think the percent of ETH staked on this thing is going to be 1 year after it goes live?
Wow. I either think it's one of those things where it's like Lido, where it just goes crazy, gets crazy adoption, or it's just like you heard about it for like 6 weeks and then just never hear again. But I would say in a bull market, this is like the exact thing that goes crazy. Would guess like, I don't know, maybe like at its peak, it gets to 30%.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I'm bullish.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I'm bullish.
30% of the world's ETH, like up to one DAO.
No, that's actually isn't that what Lido's at?
Is it at 30?
It was at 30 at some point. Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay.
But now that I'm thinking about it, maybe we're in a different time. I'll go with a little lower. I'll go with like 13%.
Okay. Over under on 30. I'll take the under still.
You'll take under? Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
I think I was going to say around 10.
Okay. Okay. Wow. All right. Yeah, Eigenlayer. I think that they just have the right product for like a real degen kind of situation, you know?
Yeah, for a group of people that sounds so academic in all of their like discourse and messaging and like, you know, it's smarter than you, like look down on the listener, right? Like, this is a fucking degen product.
Yeah, yeah,
this is a really
so
degen product.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like, who cares about the trust assumptions, man? Yeah, just like, just validate. Like, bro, more block space, bro. Come on.
Amazing.
Token's a token.
Yeah, yeah, straight up. Just keep the farms going. All right, cool. This has been Eigenlayer, another decent deep dive. We'll be back later in the week with a recap of everything that happened. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week, everybody. Till next time, stay decent.
None of this was financial advice, legal advice, investment advice, or any other kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Until next time, stay decent.